This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We've been making cheese in Wisconsin since before we were even a state, which may be one reason why we win so many awards for it. It's what happens when a whole state dreams in cheese. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Hello, welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Aaron Bresnitz. Hope everyone is having a safe and sane start to their new year. It is still crazy out there, so please take time to check in with yourself, with your loved ones, and we are all going to get through this together. We are so excited to be kicking the year off with Chef Roy Choi, who is back for season two of Broken Bread, premiering on Taste Made KCET Tuesday, January 25th at 8 p.m. Pacific. It is an incredible season. I have seen all the episodes. That is the perk of working at Taste Made, and it is a stunner. Congratulations to everyone at Taste Made and KCET who put their blood, sweat, and tears into the show. It really rings true. Roy and I chat about the new season, about the food in the new season, about how the pandemic has really brought to light the issues that season one talked about, and him sitting down with the new guard, the old guard, all the chefs in between, and how it helped him become what is now an ambassador to the food world and the stories and trends and everything that affects the kitchens and the community beyond. It's a great conversation. We're so happy to sit down with him again. But please sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Chef, welcome back to Snacky Tunes. Always good to hear from you. So nice to be sitting down with you once again to celebrate the launch of season two, Broken Bread. Here we go.
Yeah. When we made season one, I never even thought there would be a season two.
Well, I mean, that's actually what I want to start off with. You know, a lot of times you make a season one and it's a whirlwind and it's just like, this is crazy. We're making a TV show and it all comes out. But you get the special thing in making a season two. What got you excited about it? Like going back into the storytelling, going back into production, looking back at season one, what did you want to change? What made you excited to get back into production again?
Well, there are a few things that got me excited. Obviously, collectively as humans, we went through the pandemic, which exposed a lot more that we had already started to talk about. You know, so some of the things that we started talking about in season one and things that, you know, drive a lot of what I care about and think about every single day of my life. A lot of those things we thought maybe they were at their worst place already. And then the pandemic just punched another hole through it all, you know, and showed us that there are levels to it, that it goes even deeper. And so that just in itself was like, okay, you know, like there is still meaning and purpose behind Broken Bread, that that this show, maybe even that this show was a little ahead of its time in its way. Not in, I'm not talking like in some, you know, like egotistical artistic format.
Oh,
I'm just saying that maybe we weren't all open to or aware of confronting problems because they didn't affect everyone yet, you know, but then now these issues that seem so far away for maybe certain sectors of society are now, you know, very real, very personal. So now the show resonates a little more. The other thing is that, you know, I looked at everything I went through with season one, and then I went through a lot of changes in life between season one and filming season two. You know, I decided to, you know, because, you know, as a chef, I know this is a food podcast. As a chef, for a lot of us that toe the line between entertainment and blue collar work, which is what we really do, you know, behind the stove every day, it's a mind fuck, you know, it really is. It's like we're self-conscious. We're constantly hard on ourselves. We're unable to confront our true purpose, our true value. We're halfway in, halfway out, you know. And I just decided, you know, after looking at everything that, you know, one doesn't have to take away from the other. And let me try to be as good a TV host as I am a cook, you know. Let me let it not just be like, oh, I'm a cook first, and this is just something I do on the side. I really made an effort for those to live in their own silos and their own worlds. And I went in and I just thought that I had something more to say. I thought that I could work on the way that I interact with the camera more. You know, I have a kind of a personality and a face built for radio. And I just thought that maybe
you're a handsome man. You're a handsome man.
But I'm very quiet. I don't have many mannerisms. I'm not good at karaoke. I don't dance. All these things, you know, like. but I just thought that maybe like that I could improve. That's really it. And so there's that personal side. There's everything we went through, and then it's just the teams really believed in me. You know, Tastemade and KCET and PBS, and they wanted to make a show that built upon season one and make it, you know, bigger, better, invest more in it. And, you know, it just all sounded great.
Now, I want to get into the pandemic and what that exposed to more of the mainstream in a little bit. Sure. But I want to talk about the food of this season, because the food this season, beyond it being beautiful, beyond it making me want to crawl through my screen and hop over to Avenue 26 or go down to Chinatown or book a car down to Tijuana. It really represents the people, and it's delicious. And there's something about when you sit down with a plate of food, the stories and the openness you get out of others. How did you pick the food you were going to cook this season? what were some of the better moments, you know, cooking with Wolfgang, sitting, breaking bread with Alice Waters, and how did you approach the food stories you wanted to tell for season two?
You know, in building, well, I'm glad you noticed all that, because there was a conscious and concerted effort to go deeper, to be more cinematic, you know, and to really find the foods and the chefs and the restaurants and the street vendors that were fully integrated into the stories that we were telling. And, you know, with any television show or any project, you have what's called pre-production.
Sure.
And the process of pre-production for Broken Bread is it's a mixed bag of things. One, we have a really, really amazing team, and we have the libraries and the resources of public television, but we also have the young minds and the outreach of a multimedia company like Tastemade. So we have this beautiful interaction and intersection and worlds of like kind of like old world and new world and like library and social media. And we have just all of this stuff coming together. And then I'm kind of like the third wheel to all of this, where I have my relationship directly with the people through social media, through Twitter, through Instagram, you know, because everything that I am publicly was built first upon grassroots.
Right.
And so whenever I have a project or I have a question or I'm looking for something, you know, I go to the people first. And so we have this intersection of research, archives, young minds, collective coming together, and then we have the people. And so when we decided to do the show, I just go out there and I say, here's what we're looking to do in season two. If any of you know anybody doing anything in this area, in farming, or that's fighting for, you know, a neighborhood, or is fighting against the processed food system within education, or whatever the topic is, I just throw it out there. We got like over 1,000 submissions.
Incredible.
And I would say out of those 1,000 submissions, probably like 5 or 6, maybe even more, made it to the show. You know,
wow.
And you know, and a lot of it is also just research. It's a lot of research, going beyond the headlines, going beyond just what's popular, and just really digging into a neighborhood, calling friends, going outside of our circles and outside of our professional circles, especially for places like Tijuana.
Sure.
You know, where, you know, sometimes what I hate about food shows, and it's not the fault of the producers or the talent, but sometimes our food world, we cover the same people over and over. It's a bit incestuous in a way.
Right.
And it's almost like there's like a casting list of people that fit the role of what you want to cover in that area. And it's not that those people aren't important, but we just wanted to find more voices. And the only way you do that is to break out of your own individual and insular bubble. And sometimes you got to ask your grandma. Sometimes you got to ask your cousin. Sometimes you got to ask your friend. Sometimes you got to ask your mechanic, you know, like just like outside of this.
Yeah. You know? But that's the beauty of food, is that you start pulling out a thread and go, where do you get, where do you get your food? Where do you get your bread? Where do you get, you know, your groceries? What do you do? What's your meal? And you start going like, oh, this has importance to this community. And it's not this, okay, I'm looking at the media cycle. I'm looking at all this different, the same names and things like that. I want to go back to what you were talking about before, about how season one was a little bit ahead of its time, because you being a chef and also being within the restaurant world, you know, right before March 2020, you could argue is a golden age of restaurants, and between where you could drop into any city and get a crazy meal, or, you know, find the best taco truck. And the secret was that all the whispers were like, there's a labor shortage, and like labor costs are really tough, and food costs, and where this week's money goes into next week's groceries and things like that. But it was tough to complain because it looked so big. But the pandemic really said, it was a house of cards. And it had already fallen, and now it's blowing in the wind. You can't even pick up the cards. Mm-hmm. So how did you dig into that more in season two and bring your chef knowledge to it, saying that, hey, like, we've been talking about this for a while, and we need more help than just, say, buying – it's cool if you buy a hat or a T-shirt. Mm-hmm. But, like, we need real changes. We need real help. We need people to stop being exploited. This is how we're looking at how the restaurant industry is going to change for real.
Yeah, it's – well, thank you. I mean, you succinctly touched on everything perfectly. It's hard sometimes when you are so sensitive and in tune, you know, with the problems that exist. And especially us as cooks, we're solution-based people, mm-hmm. you know, and you're trying – you're very clear on what needs to be fixed or what needs, you know, like if I'm prepping and setting up for service, it's just, you know, maybe it's too simplistic, but I don't think it is, but it's, you're not going to put a ninth pan of rotten beets on your line because you know it's rotten. And then you investigate how it got rotten. You realize that it was sitting under maybe the cooler in the walk-in and it was, something was dripping in it all the time. And then you fix it. Right? You don't let things just fester once you notice it. But that's not how it is in the real world. It's such a strange phenomenon that us as humans, we are aware of these problems that exist, but we just let them be. We let them be, you know?
Oh,
and
yeah.
For cooks, we can't understand that. And, but at the same time, you can't hit everyone with everything all at once.
Right.
And, before March 2020, it was a golden age because everything was peaking. Everything was peaking. But not everyone had experienced yet the realities of life. People could still pick and choose what they wanted and what they wanted out of something. So if they wanted the best arepas, I know you're in New York, if they wanted the best arepas in Corona, Queens, they could just pick that out and not even consider or open themselves up to anything mm-hmm. around it that may be detrimental. You know,
I'm they going could over just there for the one thing. I don't care about the community. That's it.
Don't care about the community. That's it. And you were never forced to even consider that you were contributing. Maintaining a broken system or whatever the case may be. But now in March, whatever, 2022, we can't just ignore those things anymore because we've all been affected by them. And, you know, I just think at that time, season one, maybe even the world and other things, there wasn't a way to completely hit people over the head with the injustices mm-hmm. of the system because people would just tune you out. You know, you're just a buzzkill. You know, I'm contributing, I'm helping these people. Why are you trying? You don't want my money. You know, there are arguments behind that back then where people would say, well, I'm giving you my money. You don't want my money. I don't want to deal with all the other things, but now we're in a place where I think people can finally listen a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. and understand that, you know, we are in a very fragile system, that there is no safety net, and that it's not just good enough to say that you are a fan of the food or that you're an ally. You know, these systems are severely broken. You know, mm-hmm. and we tried to tell that through this show. But even now, even with everything that happened, I still have to use entertainment as a vehicle. You know, because if we were to just take this show as a transcript, right, and mm-hmm. with no cinematography, no anything, and we were just to list the issues that we're covering, even now, after everything we've gone through, a lot of folks don't want to hear it. You know, and so even now we still have to use entertainment as a bit of a tool to figure out how do we get the message further. But the positive side is that I do feel collectively we're open to it more, and that maybe change it feels a little more real.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure.
Mm.
Because even with all of the stuff that went on, you know, with the IRC and fighting, you know, with No Us Without You, with undocumented workers, with migrants, with people being forced into, you know, being deported and, you know, restaurants folding within 3 days of the pandemic and, you know, all these things, they're still
stalled in Congress.
There's still no legislation in place.
Two years later. Well, we're going to take a quick break because I want to come back and talk about some of the places you visited and some of your evolution as well. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org. Hello and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We're sitting down with Chef Roy Choi, host of Broken Bread, Season 2, coming out Tastemade KCET on January 25th. You mentioned in the first act that you've gone through a lot of personal changes and evolutions yourself. And I was really surprised by the Far East Plaza Chinatown episode where you returned to where you had sort of gotten your launch, and what I didn't realize is the weight on your shoulders of what you had done to bring a spotlight to that community and the subsequent, I don't want to say gentrification, but the changes in this neighborhood and how personally you took it. And now you talk about also being an entertainer and using your voice and bringing a spotlight to it because you've gotten to that sort of being able to amplify problems and issues on TV and your different resources. How are you balancing shining the spotlight on the things that matter to you, bringing a spotlight to people who are smaller than you and have great stories to tell, with the responsibility that you feel that you have for changing communities mm-hmm. when your only intent was really just to like give back to the community, to bring good food yeah. or different food or support the people around you?
Well, you know, we always knew we wanted to do an episode on gentrification. Mm-hmm. We just wanted to find the broken bread way of mm-hmm. telling that story, because there are so many stories, op-ed pieces, New Yorker articles, New York Times articles, shows, CNN shows, you know, political debates, there's everything, there's so many angles to what gentrification is and how it has become such a big part of, you know, modern society. We just wanted to personalize it a little more to figure out, how do we take it away from this big word
sure.
and this big concept?
Yeah.
And how do we make it so that it just feels a little more, it feels smaller. It feels like you could touch it. It feels like you could feel the pain of it, that you could understand the implications of it, you know, because sometimes we're only given the information from a very macro point of view, and we're given right. like the bullet points of it. But we just wanted to figure out, how can we tell a story like that? And, in pre-production, we were all, we went through like a million different renditions. And I don't know, one day I just woke up and I was like, what if we use my own personal story? Mm. And everyone like kind of sat up in their chair, and it was like,
exactly.
And then the biggest question from the team was, are you willing to put yourself out there? And I was like, yeah, I have nothing to lose. And if by putting myself out there, if it can help, the people that are being displaced, if it could at least start the conversation or bring awareness to it, mm-hmm. then it's worth it. And, so we just tried to use that. We it started with the question, can you still be a gentrifier if you're from that neighborhood? Mm-hmm. Even if your parents were like the legacy business themselves, but they got mm-hmm. too old and they handed you the keys, but you made maybe the most popular chocolate shop, that, right. that Snacky Tunes covers, and that every
Thai restaurant
or Thai restaurant, that covers. And then are you still a gentrifier? All you did was take your family's business and put your personality behind it. But there is argument that you are. So I just really try to understand that point of view and really go again, look back at who I was, who the food world was, who the city was at that time. Because Chego did spark the revolution for Chinatown to become labeled as the hottest food neighborhood in Los Angeles, and it did bring in 20, 25 new entrepreneurs, it did bring in, and give opportunity to really, really great artisans and vendors, but at the same time, what I didn't know what was going on at that same time that an Endorphin coffee was coming in, that a Pearl River Deli, that a Steep tea shop, that a now serving bookstore, as these stores are coming in, bring no harm at all, that have no intention to harm the developers and the landlords, were using this opportunity to raise their rents, shut off water, and kick people out that had no voice, that couldn't speak English and couldn't stick up for themselves. And I didn't know any of this was happening because Chego made Chinatown the hottest new neighborhood. And once I started to learn all that, it really hurt me. It really it really just sunk its nails into my whole soul. And it just took me a long time to figure out how to confront it. And I think Broken Bread was finally the way that I could confront it, that I could give opportunity to people like Sissy to tell us the truth of what's really good. Whether we want to hear that ugly truth or not, she's going to tell us mm-hmm. that this building, that landlord shut off the water. And that's because that landlord knew, because of Chego, that the world's attention and the media's attention was on this. So instead of before where no one cared about Chinatown and he could only get $800 a month for that, he can now charge $3,800 for it. So why wouldn't any landlord want to, you know, 3,000 times or whatever their money?
Yeah.
And, you know, that stuff really, it really hit home. And so I, you know, we use that story to try to find answers. And I think in that episode, we came up with some answers of this cooperative economic development process, where if you are going to go into a neighborhood that is marginalized, like a Chinatown or a Brooklyn or, you know, a Boyle Heights, you know, that it does come with costs. You can't just come in and play innocent anymore. Mm-mm. You can't just come in and say, hey, I'm just trying to open a tea shop, or I'm just trying to open a chocolate shop or whatever. If you are choosing that neighborhood, it has to come with a little bit of responsibility. And that's something I didn't know at that time. Yeah. Yes. And so is that a surcharge? You know, so we as a consumer are part of that responsibility too.
Yeah.
So is that a surcharge where every pizza that gets bought at whatever new pizza shop in a marginalized neighborhood because rent is cheap, but then the food media, hovers to it. Do we pay, instead of just paying $15 for the pizza, do we also pay $4 on top of that because we know we're in this neighborhood and that money goes to a fund that funds a committee that works in between development and, you know, and preservation, so that there is an oversight committee that can fight for it. And that involves developers as well and taxation and all this stuff. So I think that there's a way where it doesn't have to be that you can't go into a neighborhood, you know, where you know, because there, it does no one any good if a neighborhood just sits empty.
Sure.
When it can grow, but it can't just grow and displace everyone. So that, you know, we just try to find those answers.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate the chef perspective that you got for a lot of the season. Cause you know, talking to Johnny at PRD or Chef Leia at BU is fantastic. Cause you get this new generation of chef and like what they're trying to do different. But then you also sit down with Alice and Wolfgang, like my personal friends, Alice and Wolfgang, you know, who I know so well, but I really like the fact that you didn't just go like, here's the new chefs and here's what we're doing. It's like, it's great to be like, here's a couple of people who have survived in the industry for decades.
Yeah.
What did you learn from both sides of that coin of the conversation? What did the new class and the old guard bring to it in offering a new path forward?
You know, and I thought that was authentic and honest to the show, because me as a chef and as a food, you know, person in the industry, I've been able to walk that line where I don't see high or low, or I'm able to blur the lines. You know, that's what I do. That's the food that I cook. That's the, you know, I can be in Copenhagen on one end and I can be on the streets on another end. You know, I can have a restaurant in Las Vegas, but also be, you know, on the foodie, you know, circuit, whatever, you
cooking
know,
tacos and so,
so for me, it was authentic to who I am as a host, to what the show is, to the restaurants that I have. But also what I learned personally was like that I wasn't alone. For example, meeting someone like Uyen at Bayou, that I wasn't alone. You know, if you remember her episode, she said some specific things like, you know, there has to be a place where these things matter. You know, that I don't know if this is sustainable, but I know that these are the things that I stand for. I want to make sure that everyone makes a livable wage, that the food is affordable for the residents in this neighborhood that I'm in, which is mainly a neighborhood of color, you know, and that I'm making the right decisions, that I'm paying everyone properly, that I'm not cutting corners. And, you know, we're led to believe by doing the right thing that these things aren't profitable.
Yeah.
But what if we took profit out of the equation? And then you get all the naysayers saying, well, business is only about profit. You know, how are you going to survive? You know, but meeting her, I met a kindred spirit, you know, because Kogi is very similar to Bayou, where
I mean, even local is similar.
And local,
to
what, where in Kogi, we've never really raised our prices in 12 years. You know, we started the taco at $2; it's now $2.35. You know what I mean? And all the things that have changed in the world.
Yeah.
And but that's because we don't put profit first,
right?
And sometimes when you're, when you have this philosophy or belief, and sometimes you can feel very, very alone, and, and you can feel very ostracized because the world is just laughing at you. You know, I had business people throughout my career, the last 10 years, just lecturing me and scolding me and laughing at me, saying, you're just a child. You're naive. This is not how the real world works. But this is my real world.
I
believe as long as Kogi is healthy, that we're healthy. As long as the team can be paid, our purveyors are paid, we have no debt, but we don't necessarily make money, that is profit.
Yeah.
That's human profit. And so I learned that I wasn't alone. And then with Wolfgang, what I learned was that he cared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you can take someone that has done everything that he's done in life, and he doesn't have to care, you know, but he does. You know, it's the equivalent of a Steven Spielberg or a
Jordan
caring about like a young filmmaker, you know, that barely has the equipment to even make the film. You know? And so I learned from Wolf that he cares, that he does want to do the right thing, and he's listening, and that he's listening to younger voices like yourself, like me, like others. He wants to learn how he can help and do it. And from Alice, what I learned is that also that I'm not alone, and that I can believe in some of the idealism that I hold so tight to my heart. You know, like bigger isn't better. Time is not money.
Yeah.
You know, to hear her say those things are things that go through my head and my heart every single day of my life. You know, but sometimes I can't fully lay all those things on the table because the world will just laugh at you. You know, if you're going around and saying anything I have, you can have too. You know, if you're leading by generosity, kindness, people are always suspicious, you know, what's going on, or you're stupid. People are going to take advantage of you. You know, you better be careful. That's not how the world works. You know, Roy, you're losing out, you know. And what I learned from Alice is that, you know, there are allies out there that there is a place for idealism, because idealism is not idealism. It's only idealism to those that don't believe, you know,
or put action in.
Yeah.
So to bring it a little full circle, to wrap it up, you know, you've done the chef game, you've been on the streets, you've really earned a reputation as an elder statesman of the culinary world. You're in that conversation. And I know that you're talking about using entertainment and the mantle and the responsibility that comes. How does it feel to now be this new ambassador to the outside world about kitchen and food issues, and how it doesn't just affect the industry anymore, it affects all of us as a global community?
You know, I'm very aware of that, and I'm very sensitive and humbled by all of it. And I just try, like I would anything as far as like, if, you know, cooking goes, I just try to be honest about it and put everything that I am and that I can and that I know into it. And I'm just trying to learn every day and be humbled by it and find new ways to get better at it. You know, you know, I take every little piece of everything I learn, you know, and I just try to get better at it, but also have confidence in putting my own flavor behind it, you know. You know, and so I realize that this is not just a side hustle anymore.
Mm-mm.
Like being a television host is a real thing for me, you know. I can't run away from it anymore. Maybe in season one, I could, and even in the chef show, I could hide behind John a little bit, you know.
Sure.
You know, John is my brother and my friend, but he's the man, you know, and I could easily disappear a little bit behind him.
Yeah.
You know, but what it is, I have to look head on into the fact that I'm a major food programming television host.
Yeah.
And what do I want to do with that? And so, you know, this season I think is a representation of that growth, is the cinematography, the soundtrack, the timing, the music, the conversations, my interaction with the camera, you know, the storytelling, and just the investment in trying to make the show as big, to feel as big and as entertaining as possible, you know. And, you know, I approach it like a restaurant, you know, like a brand new restaurant. You know, I'm just trying to create the best environment possible so that, you know, and I'm looking at everything. No stone goes unturned, you know. And so, you know, sometimes I think maybe the team, they don't get frustrated with me, but it you know, I definitely, the thing that's made me better, and I think that's made all of us better, is I've grown into my role. They already had their roles because they're television professionals. You know what I mean? They were just waiting for me to figure this shit out. You know, so, but I've grown into my role.
Yeah.
Where I'm looking at every little detail. I'm analyzing my own self. I'm analyzing how I could be better in this. I'm questioning the arc of the story. I'm involved in every little piece, every little segment, every little scene, every little frame, you know. I'm watching the edits and the dailies over and over. I spent, you know, I'm not the official editor. Shout out to the editors,
because
they did all the work, but I'm working as long as they are. I'm watching each episode for 40, 50, 60 hours, mm-hmm. you know, over and over and over again, just, you know, trying to do my part to be a professional television host. And I think I got a little better this season. I really do.
I've seen the episodes, and I'll say if I was a diner at Restaurant Broken Bread, I'd be coming back many times over to eat with you. Congratulations. Season 2 premieres Tuesday, January 25th, 8 p.m. Pacific, on Tastemade and KCET. If they want to follow you, your adventures, I know that you're going to be doing some posting, some supplemental stuff. Where can they find you? How can they DM you with their own suggestions for, you know, things for you to consider?
Slide into my DMs.
Yeah.
I am at Chef Roy Choi everywhere.
Awesome. Well, Chef, thank you so much. Congratulations. I'm not just saying it because I work at Tastemade. It's a phenomenal season. I watched every episode. Loved it. So much stuff. I was just taking notes. I was like, I'm eating here. I'm reading about this. I'm following this organization. It's a great primer.
That was the goal. And I'm glad. I mean, honestly, I want to end with this. And I know we're ending, is everything you just said and your eyes and the feeling that I just felt and saw, that was the goal of the show. We wanted to make entertainment first. The message is disguised within the food.
Yep.
And within the idea that it's a food show, and all the food porn and all the food finds and all that stuff. But really, that's to lure you in to hear the message. And I'm just so glad that it resonated. We were so nervous about it because we wanted to make a show that felt primetime, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel we did.
You did.
Again, maybe like we started this conversation, maybe the world's not ready yet. You know, maybe by season 3, the world will have caught up to where this content will become primetime. Not maybe necessarily our show, but my dream as a human is that this content is on the same level and same value as Dancing with the Stars.
Or I love it. Well, we
whatever
can dream.
The case may be, you know.
We can dream, and you'll be one of the people to take us there. Thank you for the time.
Appreciate it.
We got a song from the archives. And then a live performance from the Immaculates from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on HRN.org.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. There's a reason when you think of Wisconsin, you think cheese. Cheese is a huge part of Wisconsin's history and future. In Wisconsin, the state of cheese, the tradition of cheesemaking excellence began 180 years ago, before Wisconsin was recognized as a state. Immigrants traveled to settle in this lush green hills of Wisconsin, bringing their cheesemaking traditions with them. These storied skills combined with the freshest milk available created a cheesemaking culture that is uniquely Wisconsin. Wisconsin's 1,200 cheesemakers, many of whom are third and fourth generation, continue to pass on old world traditions while adopting modern innovations in cheesemaking craftsmanship. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
This week, we have the Immaculates in studio. Welcome.
Welcome, gents. Looking dapper.
I can say, last week we had the boys of Maison Premier here looking dapper. They were the most dapper food guests. You now have the title of the most dapper band, so congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You are taking my short and sleeveless look and making it even look more like
I mean, I would say that I definitely thought about wearing a button-up shirt today and wearing it because I knew you guys would be wearing ties.
Yeah, it's had that effect, we've noticed, you know, sometimes.
Yeah.
We just because we're dressing up, like people who, you know, are at shows sometimes tend to just dress up.
But I feel like that's a thing, like, you know, it's like when we used to go to ska shows when we were in in high school, you know, like.
I was never at a ska show.
Okay, before. You bought me tickets on our, like, 60-part ska against racism, a seven-hour show, fighting the good fight.
7 hour show, 400 songs, all of them sound the same. So let's go around the room, introduce yourselves.
Pick me up.
Yeah. Who plays what? What do you guys do? Let's do that.
My name's Matt Convoy and I play the bass.
I'm Cyrus, I play drums.
I'm Jay, I play pipes. I don't know, vocals.
Who's the Don?
That's our manager.
He's not with us today.
Oh, okay.
He's being held by customs, so he can't be. He won't be back in the country for a couple more.
I gotcha. He's got a. I thought he was in Washington today. He's overseeing the debt ceiling crisis.
Yeah. Well, he's a lot of places. He's a man around town.
A man around town. So you guys had a fantastic show at DBA on Friday, and it's a different type of sound because you're definitely pulling from some of the soul and rock and roll stuff, but then you definitely have like a lot of that. I'm going to say hardcore punk influences as well with the vocals and things like that. What's that look?
No, we're looking at you.
I'm just
you're making good observations.
Yeah,
gentlemen of the Immaculate.
These are observations. So can you talk to us
respond
about your influences and about the sound that you're putting out because it's not like any other.
I think
band
hardcore punk is accidental, but you know, I could shave my head into I could do a mohawk, but yeah, I think it's you know we're trying to do soul and we don't know how to do it. And then everything else is an accident.
Right.
And it's like, I mean, this is like, especially the setup, you know, it's so simple with just like the bass and you know, just the vocals and drums. It's just like a simple thing. So it kind of can, you know, the simplicity kind of makes it, you know, anything, you know, it's like, could be kind of Stooges-y. It could be right. Kind of like this-y, but you know, we want to play solo. I think as this band is very new, we're learning more and kind of like, you know,
I mean, I definitely think a lot of soul music is based around the rhythm section and then everything else, the horns, the strings, and things like that. And then the voice really adds to the song. That's really where the soul of soul music comes from.
Yeah. And you listen to early soul and it's like, it's a lot dirtier and kind of like, I mean, it was also the recording techniques at the time, but it's like, so maybe it sounds like more of that. Maybe we'll evolve into being more, you know, regular. I don't know. It's just we this band is an accident, and it's a happy accident.
How is it an accident?
Well, I mean, really, what it was we all wanted to be in a band that we would want to listen to at a party.
And, that's a good place to start.
I guess that's not an accident. But whatever.
But it was kind of an accident that we ended up trying to play soul music, but that just seemed like the best fit. For what we were I think what we all kind of
imagined. We were actually at a party together
playing soul music,
and they were playing soul music. We're like, we should just play this. That'd be fun, right? This summer, because all of our other bands are kind of like, you know, like writing or doing weird things or like I don't know, in some kind of weird, you know, we're not playing the summer, so we're like, let's just have a party band for the summer. We'll play people's houses. We'll sing out of amps. We'll just whatever, you know, like.
I think if someone had described to me party band in Brooklyn with soul music inspiration. I would go see it. But let's hear.
Yeah,
enough talking about an abstract.
Yeah.
All right.
So we got the Immaculates playing live on Snacky Tunes. And what's the first song?
It's called Hey Joe Kelly.
Okay, all right. Here we go. Take it away. We'll be right back. Wow.
All right.
You are also the loudest band we've ever had on Snacky Tunes. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Name that song. Name that song again. Now, not the distorted microphone.
All right. It's Hey Joe Kelly.
Do we need a second? Have a sip of beer. Catch a breath.
Yeah. I mean,
that was great.
It takes it out of me.
It does. You guys got to have an awesome live show and live performance. It's very it's very tight, as they would say. It's tight.
Thank
and
you. Yeah, thank you.
Titan Sling. What are the plans for the rest of the summer? That you guys going on tour at all? You guys looking to get out in the road, eat some food, hang out with some people?
Well, we have a show on Saturday at the Brooklyn Bowl.
Love that place. So you're going to get some
food. Oh, they feed you. Yeah.
I'm going to get a $9 milkshake.
Oh, yeah, it's worth it.
It is.
Get a $9 milkshake.
I was talking to John Dwyer, and OCs were about to play there, and I was like, you got better get that $9 milkshake and just grab it to me. But you now I can have my own $9 milkshake.
I think you should request it to drink it while playing. See what happens.
That sounds awful.
I want to have a steak waiting for me when I get off.
Yeah.
Too bad. You were playing really late. At 2 a.m. or something like that. So.
That's the problem with playing there is that it's you don't want to eat at 3 in the morning, but there is no time early enough unless it's the day before to eat your free meal at Brooklyn Bowl when you're playing. But it's so good.
It is so good.
I'm only going to have three chicken wings and I'm going to play the show.
Yeah, but it should be fun. It's like that Contora Records late night thing.
And
Kevin Barnes is DJing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Saturday?
Fun. Yeah.
This is going to be awesome. I will say this about Brooklyn Bowl, and we've said it on here before. We'll say it again. Easily one of the most professional, best staff. Ever as far as it goes,
Williamsburg,
I mean, and know the venues that we all sometimes go and play and run the gamut from your hole in the walls out in Bushwick to the city. They hands down have brought it's you need this, great. Oh, you want this, awesome.
I couldn't agree more.
Can I say how pumped I was to feel air conditioned coasting on my skin on Friday night at DBA?
Oh yeah, it's great, right? Air conditioning.
It's always been there. It's just a little finicky.
Yeah, well, not always. Maybe last summer we started, but it was not. It was intermittent. Now it's pretty good.
I mean, I've had some sweaty nights, some great nights, and the new state. It looks good.
Thank you.
Looks good.
Thank you.
Where do you guys fit into the Brooklyn scene? I know that it's so easy to get divided because you guys have your other projects are much easier to place because you're you're in the noise rock and you're in the surf rock and you're the blah, blah, and the indie rock, but it's the Burp Burp Rock?
Burp Burp. We don't know. It's too new, but it seems to be kind of, I don't know.
I kind of feel like we fit kind of naturally in a way because we don't sound like any of the bands that you really see a lot in our world, but I don't know. I almost feel like everybody kind of is down because of that, because it's slightly a breath of fresh air, I hope. Instead of all right, great, this is, we're really into garage rock, guys. I don't know. There's a lot of the same, so I think anything that's weird or not normal maybe helps.
I think my favorite type of nights for parties are DJs with one band,
Yeah.
And I feel with your guys, the sound you guys do, it's you fit, but that band is also kind of a DJ set. They have to keep the energy.
We've done that before, and it's worked great.
And I think that, it's that fine line between show and party, and one band is a party, two bands are a show, and it's a totally different approach to how you're going out and the way that people are engaged or paying attention. So I think that you guys fit
And I think that you guys will pair nicely with Bake Sale Hood Up You, who is definitely a Vivian Girls-esque inspired Memphis quartet.
Why don't we get another song?
They were great.
Those girls were great.
Let's get another
great
song.
Guitar playing.
Yeah,
another song.
Yeah, let's get another song.
All right.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. All right, so we got the Immaculates playing live on Snacky Tunes. Big shout out to Zoe Shack. Happy birthday, Zoe. Here we go. Take it away.
Come on.
Damn.
That is... Sorry, so you have the biggest smile on your face when you're drumming.
That's because I made a mistake.
Oh. Is that it?
Hey, Greg, like way to call him out.
Oh, I was like, man, he looks so happy.
So I with all that movement, I can see why you chose not to eat pizza before the performance.
Yeah, it's going
to
be good after, though.
Pizza was a bad choice.
Beer was good.
The beer will just loosen those limbs up. Heat up those pipes.
We should go to Mason Premier Lair today and get some oysters and beer.
I mean, I was running today listening to last week's episode because I wasn't here, and I was like, dollar oysters sounds awesome.
Did you get that off our podcast archive?
Where are their dollar oysters?
Mason Premier does dollar oysters from 4 to 7 every day.
And it's not just like those stringy oysters. Little poopy oysters. It's like their menu.
Stringy little poopy
oysters.
You
know what I'm talking about.
Who serves those?
My brother was just at some place. I think he was there and he said
that. Or something like that. It's like different.
They have like 15
I haven't been over there, and I love oysters.
You're a big oyster fan? Yeah, what do you guys eat in Williamsburg? What's your place?
Diner?
For like a nice meal? Yeah, Diner, Marlowe and Sons.
How about for like I'm hungover?
Yeah, when you're slumming it.
Maybe Taco Chulo, maybe Best Pizza.
Those nachos?
Best
the
Pizza.
Nachos.
The nachos.
Those nachos for the hangover cure. Oh.
They have the
pies and thighs. Come on, we're like,
one more thing about their nachos. Their nachos have so much toppings that you have to order extra chips to get all the toppings up. Nowhere else.
No. Usually it's like a thin layer of topping, and then you're like, what is this?
We actually like this place that's kind of like off the radar that we'll give love to called Patricia's.
Oh, I never heard of that.
It's on Broadway between Wythe and Kent. There's like a little alley right there, but it's right on Broadway. It's this old school kind of Italian place. It's newer though. But they have a place in the Bronx, and it's like family. It's like New York Italian.
Is it like
ziti? You know?
Okay.
It's simple.
So like red sauce and checkered tablecloth.
It's simple, and it's kind of like not hipsters. You know, so it's kind of fun. Like you're like, I'm right, and you know, but it's like.
Oh, I only like going to places where my server's drunker than I am. So
no, they are drunk, but just like
Patricia's,
you know,
on Broadway between Wythe and
yeah, it's
right,
dope.
That's right.
It's like
really
check out that like they have like some they do this calamari where then they put it with like banana peppers in like a spicy red sauce, like you know stuff like that. It's simple and kind of a, you know, more like.
So I have a question.
Can we ask you, what's with all the burger places opening up around all of us? Do you see the new one, Burger Guru, on like North Ace?
Have you ever been to Bad Burger? It's really bad. It's gross.
Is it like Williams Burger?
I mean, I love a good burger, but I feel like we have. I mean, I think Diner's Burger
and then Dumont Burger. Like,
I mean, those burgers are great. And actually, Roebling Tea Room has a really, really good burger too.
Is that the one with the English muffin?
What's the one? No,
that's
the English muffin. Is
Piano's
so
has an English muffin.
Piano's.
Burger. That one's. I mean. It's like makes pianos worthwhile. It's like
there's a place on North 6th. Sweetwater?
Sweetwater. That's English muffin. Yeah, I
love the English muffin.
I guess I just don't understand new burger places opening up in that like, you know, North 8th.
It's an easy sell.
Meanwhile, we don't really have a great Indian restaurant at all.
Oh, no. A place opened up on Grand. It's okay.
Oh,
I haven't been there yet. You've been there?
It's okay.
It's all right.
But yeah, I mean, a good Indian place would come in and like sweep. I've always like there's that place in North Fifth that's fine.
I mean, we can open up a place called Samosas and Dosas.
Killer Dumpling Place.
Yeah, Killer Dumpling Place. We just got the meatball shop.
That's cool.
And what else?
I gotta go to Flushing or over the bridge to get dumplings though. I don't know.
It's I mean, there's so many. I mean, the Banh Mi place was a nice addition.
Yeah, Matoy.
You're thinking of the Banh Mi on Bedford.
Yeah, and you know what? You know what's actually really good Mexican food? The one on North 7th and Bedford, that little truck right next to Salvation Armor.
I never go there.
They're semitas. If you have no plans for the rest of the day, go get a semita. It's really awesome.
I'm from California, so Mexican food is just
different. Yeah, that's
thoughts on Dos Toros?
It's good. It's like...
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
It's good. No, it's like a good place in California. It's like it's the right style.
Yeah.
It's good. I like it. And I've only eaten it once, so I can't, like, really, like, you know, fully...
Well, if you come to the barbecue this Saturday...
I actually like that place.
I really like
Acapulco or whatever. It's, like, way up... No, that's not the name of it. It's, like, you know where St. Vitus is?
Papacito?
No, not that place. Do you know where St. Vitus is? Like, way up on Manhattan?
Acapulco.
Yeah, it's right next door to that.
Mm-mm.
It's so good. It's, like, on Manhattan, like, almost at the end.
I mean, I'm a big fan of Calexico, but that's its own thing.
Yeah, Calexico's great.
I've still never been there.
It is good.
They just... I think on Friday night they launched their like late night menu.
Oh, cool!
You know, when you're hungry.
So we're running short on time, so we want to make sure we get all the Twitter handle website thing and get one more song in.
Okay.
So
It's just theimmaculates.com. It's not really that hard. And Twitter is the Immaculates.
The Immaculates.
SoundCloud, MySpace, Facebook.
SoundCloud is Immaculate.
I think the Immaculate's on Facebook is a white rap group.
Yeah, we don't know that.
It's not.
But that's not side
yeah.
project.
Yeah.
Matt puts his hair in cornrows.
SoundCloud is just Immaculate.
Okay. And then when's the next show after Brooklyn Bowl? Anything?
It's another one at Brooklyn Bowl
in September.
Oh, you guys doing a little residency?
We're planning a tour right around August.
From Death by Audio to
Brooklyn
Bowl.
We're doing a 7-inch and a tour in October.
And we have a show at Dead Herring.
We have a show at Dead Herring coming up, but I don't remember
the
date.
On the 30th of September.
Awesome. Well, you can get all the information there. Hey, guys, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for bringing this drum set. I've been looking dapper and hanging out.
And thanks to Noah Ray.
My tie matches my drum set.
Oh, I noticed all your ties match. Thanks to Noah.
It's not an accident.
No, Ray from Mile End, citywinery.com for all information for the barbecue blowout this Saturday. And guess what? Mile End's going to be there. Dos Toros, Mexico, Van Dag,
Craft,
Mama Fuco, Punches, Computer Magic,
Ducky,
Mild, Midnight Magic. And guess what? The best part about the barbecue happening next Saturday is that you never have to hear us push it again until next summer.
Yeah, that's actually, I'm excited for it, but it'll be nice to take a verbal break from it.
I've been eating those Mile End sandwiches every Sunday.
Oh,
they rule.
I know. And also tonight, Punches is playing at Westway, and then Thursday night we're playing at Tammany Hall.
With French Horn Rebellion and Los Dos.
It starts the Flavor Party.
The Flavor Party. Party.
I think they're going to be dancers, actually.
I'm pretty sure they sent a flyer and they said 12:30 surprise, and it's not.
It's not Terry out of a cake.
It's not Terry
out
of a cake. Thanks for listening. We got the boys from TU Disco on next week.
And the food guest is Lauren Dean.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited. She's great. She's a fantastic television producer.
All right, boys. What's this last song called?
It's called That Sound.
That Sound. All right. The Immaculates on Snacky Tunes. Here we go.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.